You can swear off French fries and live at the gym, but it won't get rid of certain stubborn pockets of fat. Those need to get iced with Cool Sculpting. It's the newest non-surgical solution at the Plastic Surgery Clinic. Cool Sculpting freezes fat cells in problem areas so your body can just flush them away forever. Find out more at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca and book your free consultation. Cool Sculpting at theplasticsurgeryclinic.ca. It stops fat cells cold.
Little change in your starting lineup, swapping one big sports guy for another big sports guy. Jeff Blair fills in for Bob McCowan. This is Primetime Sports on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
One of the best songs of all time. Hey, hey, hey. It's like a great summertime song.
So the new...
You don't care about this?
I don't care about this. So the new Bob Water, the new Primetime Sports Water, has no Stephen Brunt or Damian Cox on it.
Who? Yeah, it's true. It's just Bob pointing.
Are you sketching a likeness of yourself on the bottle of water?
That's definitely not me. It's way too thin to be me.
Who is it?
Just get rid of it anyhow. Yeah, so the new Bob Water's out, which is good. You're right. It's kind of naked without anybody else. It's going to get tongues wagging. Bob Water with just Bob. And really, when you really get down to it, all you need is Bob.
Bum, 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 bum. All you need is Bob. Bob. So that Bob was a very
it's prime
interesting.
Time sports, by the way, Arash Madani and Jeff Blair.
Very interesting conversation with LeVar Arrington. And the takeaway from it, one, read option, wildcat, gimmicks, defense is going to figure it out, of course. But for Arrington, who is still very much a presence in the Washington market.
Yeah.
To come out and say RG3's best situation is in quote another profession.
I thought that was pretty telling.
I mean, you talk about bringing it.
Yeah. Between him and Clinton Portis, it's been two good days of we should just make the Redskins our team.
Yeah.
And just cover them, cuz God knows there's no other team in football that's as much fun. Oh wait. Wait. There is a team that's as much fun. The New England Patriots. Hence, that's another segue.
You're really proud of yourself when you do that.
I am truly proud of myself. Hence, we bring in Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. By the way, the paperback edition of Bob's book, Scribe, My Life in Sport, is out today. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I'm very thrilled about that because that's never happened to me before, with the exception of a book I did with some guy you may have heard of, some guy named Bird.
Yeah, it was a pretty good book.
Yeah, but he hogged all the credit. So what can I tell you? Now, yeah, I'm really honored and thrilled, because I had a bunch of books before, and this is the first time it's been deemed worthy of going paperback. So it's a big milestone for me. Yeah, thanks, guys.
Well, good for you, and congratulations. We were just joking a little bit when we came on. We just had LeVar Arrington on talking about the Washington Redskins, the mess there. Mm. We had Clinton Portis yesterday, and. LeVar Arrington just basically said, I asked him, all right, if RG3's best place, if he can't play in Washington, where's the best place for him? And LeVar Arrington set a new career, which pretty much sums it up.
You know, it's a really interesting story when you look at where he was in 2012, up to the moment of truth, which was the fateful decision of Mike Shanahan to leave him in that game. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know that I assume that everything that's happened is not directly attributable to that, but it does seem that his career took a downward turn at that moment, and it's never turned back upwards. And you wonder what would have happened. I don't know, bad karma, whatever, but everyone in the world knew he shouldn't have stayed in that game, and Shanahan seemed to be the only person that didn't. And it's never gone right since, but he was the offensive rookie of the year, and he was Russell Wilson before Russell Wilson, with a better arm. And to see this, can't even get his job back. I know he's concussed, But clearly, this coach doesn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner has always been his biggest booster, and I don't know how that's going to go be resolved ultimately, but it is a very it's an interesting story. Except for him, I don't think it's more it's not interesting. It's his life.
Yeah.
It's not going very well.
Well, you know, the thing is, our good friend Dave Shinen of the Washington Post, a terrific writer, wrote a book with RG3, and the thing to keep in mind, and you know this, and Arash, you do as well. RG3 came out. He was highly touted. He was an exciting player, but a lot of people also looked at him as this really bright, articulate guy. He was a guy that looked
a can't miss.
He looked tailor made to be a spokesperson, a generational leader. People talked about him eventually going into politics. All this stuff, and you know, I mean, other NFL quarterbacks have gone into to politics as well. But this was a guy that the NFL was looking at this guy for the longest time, weren't they, Bob? Is, you know, this is the anti guy with all that stuff going on with gunplay and, you know, the domestic assault charges, yada yada yada. He was going to be the guy. He was the example of how you acquit yourself as an NFL player, as a pro athlete. The league had a lot invested in this guy, not just the Redskins.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Good looking guy and glib and. Oh yeah, he had the whole thing going, and no, there isn't any question. And as they say, Russell Wilson has inherited that mantle just seamlessly.
Mm-hmm.
That was supposed to be RG3's. Is it over? No, not necessarily, but it certainly has taken a negative course, and I think that relocation and change of the proverbial change of scenery is the only recourse at this point. And I guess they're just going to have to get Daniel Snyder on board with that.
Bob, let's talk about the quarterback in your neck of the woods. Brady going to play next Thursday?
Honest to God, I don't know. Look, here's the now stop me when I misspeak here.
Sure. Okay.
Wasn't the idea of the appeal of the judge's role to adjudicate one thing and one thing only, the appropriateness, the procedure, the process that brought about Goodell's decision, not the decision, not deciding right or wrong for himself or judging PSI levels or any or cell phone disposals or anything else. It was simply, did Roger Goodell act in accordance with the CBA? Isn't that what we were told it was all about?
Yep.
So it seemed to me it was. It seemed to me it was, no matter what you think about right or wrong, I don't understand the problem. To me, I mean, Goodell did what he was allowed to do because the Players Association did not place enough premium on this issue to negotiate it differently in their CBA. I don't know that Goodell see how where he violated the process. He had the right to appoint himself, it seems to me. Now, unless they're going to go nitpicking about whether Pass should have been summoned and all that, all right, maybe that's enough. I don't know. So I can't see the judge. In the end, if he's going to stick to what he was supposed to be doing, as much as I believe firmly this thing is a bunch of hooey,
mm-hmm.
and it's a bunch of absolute triviality in real life that had nothing to do with anything with the outcome of that game, but that's not the issue. So I can't see where the judge is going to. This is just the layman's point of view.
Sure,
there's
mm-hmm.
conflicting opinion here on that.
There's two things.
Conflicting.
Bob, there's two things here, though, right? There's two things. One, he's either going to be suspended the full four games or zero.
Zero.
Two, more probable than not, the foundation of the Ted Wells report does not stand up in a court of law. And that's where we are.
Yeah.
Well, I would applaud that myself. But, okay, if it's the foundation of the report as opposed then Goodell signed off on a bogus report. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Of course. Of course.
Of course, Goodell. The other thing is this. Now, here's the one thing I should. I did speak and ramble on as I often do. I just the other factor. There's so many yeah buts about this whole story, the whole issue. But one of them is we were actually being asked to believe. Roger Goodell and looked at us, all of America and Canada, with a straight face and said, Troy Vincent made this ruling. Ha ha, hardy har har.
Yeah.
You know, come on. Maybe that's a point where the judge can attack Goodell's good nature, good goodwill in this, which I would think. So maybe I misspoke and said maybe there's plenty of reasons for him to rule otherwise. I don't know. You know, let me, for the 10 millionth time, I stress, I honestly believe, gentlemen, I truly believe with every fiber of my body, because nothing has happened to change, to force me to alter my opinion, that this would have been settled the day after were it any other team.
I totally agree with you.
National Football League, I get a phone call, and the conversation would have been as follows. Hey, this is Joe Blow from the league office. We come to our attention that you may have been fooling around with the air pressure of the footballs. Naughty, naughty, mustn't do. It's 25 Gs. Put the check in the mail. We'll see you later. And then everybody in that office in New York would go to lunch. Oh, no, not with the Patriots. The Patriots are the consummate envelope pushers, to be polite. It's 99% of the time, it's the coach. This time, we don't have the coach directly tied to anything. But I truly believe this is Goodell's opportunity to mollify the other 31 owners, put a smile on their face, and slap down the Patriots for all their transgressions, real or imagined, over the last 10 or 12 years. That's what I believe. And I will not change that opinion until forced to do so, when nothing has been presented to me to make me change my opinion.
What's interesting, too, in all this, and you mentioned how the Patriots are enemy number one over there, and, you know, what goes on in Foxborough, it almost feels as if it's FBI headquarters. But your colleague, Bob, Dan Shaughnessy, in his notes column the other day, I noticed reported very quietly that John Yastrzemski, one of the equipment guys who's all over the Wells report, who is suspended by the organization, apparently he's been hanging around Gillette.
That's what I read, and that's the first time I saw it. And I did see Dan yesterday, and I didn't bring that point up to ask him, you know, to follow up on that. But, yeah, very interesting. And, of course, that was always ridiculous, the idea that, you know, that he was going to be, well, they needed a fall. Hey, here's a phrase for you. Ready? Want to write it down? Got your pen and pad ready?
Fall guy.
How's that? He was the fall guy. So, I don't know.
Chris Carter.
Yeah.
Chris Carter approved. Fall guy.
I'm just funning.
I know you are.
Fall guy.
I know.
There you go. The fall guy theory came to light there. Oh, my God. Yeah, I did see that note. I'm sure that arched a few eyebrows around the league. Yeah.
Conversation with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. So the Red Sox are playing the Yankees, and Jays fans, maybe for the first time ever, well, first time in a long time, become diehard Red Sox fans in this series.
That's right. You have a strongly vested interest.
We have a strong vested interest in how the Red Sox do against the Yankees. It seems, Bob, as if the Red Sox have played a little better under Torrey Lovullo. Probably not necessarily the direct result of Torrey Lovullo as much as the fact that they're just kind of playing out the string right now. But what are the Red Sox... What are the Red Sox players, what do they have to show David Dombrowski in this month? What does he need to see, Bob?
Well, I mean, obviously they just have to play at a major league level and don't do some of the things that they were doing previously when they were not just losing baseball games in the months of April, May, June, and July, but losing them in a highly ugly fashion with bad, shoddy baseball, just everything from poor defense to poor base running to, dumb pitches and counts and bad situational hitting. It was an entire package that got them where they were. Here's a couple things that I would submit to you right now. One of them, I can tell you a supposition that's out there among the baseball writers who cover the team, is that indeed they are playing with more energy under Torrey, and that the underlying inference might be that John Farrell's low-key approach wasn't working and wasn't reaching them, but that Torrey, whom I don't know exactly what level of wattage he provides, but it's a different voice and it's a different approach a little bit maybe, and that they seem to be responding with a little more energy. Second thing is this: I think they have hit that point in the schedule for them. First of all, it is a team that has residual position player talent. Most of it, and some of it is, a lot of it is young. They have a very, very impressive and intriguing young nucleus of talent, talented players. I'm talking about Betts and Bogart and Travis Shaw at first base, Blake Sweart. There's four names right there. Okay, they have reached, but they're playing kind of, you know, they're out of it. They're not going anywhere. They're kind of loosey-goosey, and they're playing with a kind of a, you know, swag, not a swagger, you know, but a little comfort level. And now they're a dangerous team to play now because they're auditioning for the new boss, so they're playing hard, but they're not playing, you know, tight hard. They're playing hard. They're playing smart. They got young players who can do stuff. They had the other night and beating the Mets. There was in the same game, two guys advanced up the baseline on very short pass balls / wild pitches. And it happened to be the young talent. You know, it was Betts and it was Jackie Bradley Jr. I forgot to mention him, who's got an OPS of over 1,000 in the last month. Did I mention that?
Mm-hmm.
And he is the best defensive center fielder I've ever seen in a Red Sox uniform in 52 years I've been watching him play up close and personal.
Mm.
He is the very best, and they've had some good ones, and he's the best. He may be a real keeper. Well, they each advanced and set up runs that wouldn't have been scored had they not advanced that extra base. They're doing stuff like that with their talent. They have talent, guys. They really do. I mean, I'm ready for spring training. Bring on the pitchers and catchers. I want to see these guys next year. I mean it. They have guys.
Yeah.
Now they got to find Dombrowski's got some. Here's his mandate: A, get rid of Hanley. However you do it, get rid of him.
So you don't think there's
evaporate him.
You don't believe, Bob? You don't believe there's a position switch would help Hanley at all? Like you don't believe there's one out there.
Handling throws from infielders that will throw with no confidence that he's going to pick it. No, I don't want that. I don't want him near there. Now, I know that Torrey is saying, well, we're watching him now, and I can see the infielder in him. The hands, he can handle the ground balls. Oh, that's fine. That's not what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the throws. I'm worried about the thing is he has no work ethic. Yeah. He didn't work in left field. What makes anybody think he's going to work to be a good first baseman? Master the footwork, master the position play, master the cutoffs, master the bunt plays, all that stuff. First base is a very underrated position. I speak as an old little league first baseman.
Well, it's true. You're
proprietary towards first baseman. My boyhood idol, by the way, guys, was Ted Kluszewski.
Right.
Okay. Now,
part of the problem, Bob, too, is that the pitcher, the catcher, the first baseman, those are the guys that have the ball all the time. And you don't want the ball around Hanley all the time.
He's got to be expunged. And the second thing, of course, is to find some pitchers. And that's his mandate because, really, and they need more power. There's no question that they don't have power at positions where you need power. And there's no question about that. But they got some nice young players. I mean, what if this is the real Jackie Bradley Jr., what we're seeing now?
Mm-hmm.
This is what they dreamed of. He's a Gold Glove center fielder in his sleep. He doesn't make great catches because he's always there. He doesn't go around diving around things. He doesn't have to dive. He's there.
Right.
He reads the ball off the bat as well as any center fielder I've ever seen in a Red Sox uniform. Mm. And they've had some damn good ones, starting with Lynn and others. But now he had this run where he had 13 straight extra base hits. And if this is the real guy, that he's figured it out, he's found the formula, that's a hell of a player.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to play center. And then Betts is smart, and he'll move somewhere. You know, they may be able to move Sweetheart somewhere. And remember, they got Christian Vasquez, who's the fourth Molina brother, in case you haven't heard.
Yes, he is.
Got the Molina brother seal of approval. It was just a breathtaking player behind the plate.
Yeah,
and if
he
can come back the way he was, I know he's coming off Tommy John surgery. Now they got a catcher, and Sweetheart's an athlete. And he's a player. They can put him somewhere else. Maybe he becomes the first baseman.
Mm-hmm.
There's hope here is what I'm saying for next year. But right now, you may not want to play these guys the rest of the year.
Bob, we began our segment talking about your new book that's out on paperback, Scribe, My Life in Sports. You mentioned something right along with that I wanted to get back to.
Okay.
Your book with Bird. Give us a couple of stories that Larry may have passed on to you that said, don't put that one in the book, Bob.
Oh, well, the problem is there were two things that were off limits.
Okay.
And it was funny. One you'd think, you know, what's the problem? But it just shows the dignity, of the respect, you know, of the mutual respect. He had a fight with, you know, an on court tussle with Dr. J.
Right.
And he told me we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to any because you know he was embarrassed by it. They both were. And then when Dr. J retired and he made his farewell tour and the Celtics did what they do, their traditional gift of homage is to give someone a piece of the parquet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Dr. J got one of their traditional pieces, and Larry presented it to him. And the other thing he didn't talk about, he couldn't because of a legal aspect, and that was he had a very celebrated fight in which he hurt his hand and during the playoffs in 1985, they were during the 76er series, at a bar.
Yep.
And there was a settlement involved, and as a result of the settlement, nobody talks, and Larry doesn't talk. But he had to pay up, and he didn't talk about that. He was willing to talk about his father's suicide, which he had never really wanted to address in public before, things like that. I don't have a whole lot, really. I mean, other than that, you know, he told what he had to tell. The funny one we always love to cite. It's not. It's just a fun little thing. It just shows you that how much, you know, high school. You never get over the high school hurts. You never get over the high school losses. They stick with you the rest of your life. And he had a friend named Beezer, B-E-E-Z-E-R, Carnes. And they were supposed to come into the gym at 6:30 and shoot free throws every day. And they all showed up, but Beezer didn't show up half the time. And sure enough, they got into the big game in the tournament. And guess who kept getting fouled for the one-on-ones? And guess who kept clanking them up there?
Right.
And they lost. And to this day, Larry never misses an opportunity when he's in Indiana to remind people that Beezer screwed him, you know, lost the games for them with the free throws, that he didn't show up at 6:30 in the morning. Now, that's about as far as I can go with. He didn't dish dirt on, you know, Lambeer. I mean, you know, he told the same stuff he told us when he was playing against Lambeer, you know, that it drove him crazy to get on the bus. He said, one time he told me, I hate the All-Star game. I love the All-Star game, but the part I hate is getting on the bus. And there's Lambeer, and I'm supposed to shake hands with Lambeer. Good morning, Bill. How you doing? You know, you know, Larry could be very funny that way. And you know, that's all. But it was a pleasure working with him. Obviously, it was a great. It was an honor, and it was fun. And you know, I've maintained a nice relationship with Larry, and I'm very, very proud of it. And
what'd you learn about him, Bob, in that process that you didn't really know before?
The full extent of the culture that he grew up in and how it impeded him, his social development and his intellectual growth. You were so locked in a box as to how you were supposed to live. And the number one rule is don't get uppity. You know, right. You are who you are. You're born, you're a working class guy. You go get a job, go hunt and fish, maybe play golf. You're not better than anybody else, and nobody's better than anybody else around here. You know, he grew up in the poorest county in Indiana, Orange County, and school, you know, it was just a burden. And he's not stupid. I mean, he's highly educable, highly aware, but uneducated. I used to kid that he successfully evaded the American educational system for 21 years. You know? And it's true, and he is smart. And, you know, he's not an intellectual. He doesn't have a pretense, but he reads. He read. I remember during his career, I used to, he used to read books on the road. I mean, he'd read the trendy bestseller of the day kind of thing, you know. But when he would go home, he'd have to tone himself down, you know, in 1988, I did a Globe magazine story on him. And about the blossoming of Bird and how he has learned to become a big media, you know, manipulator, and he doesn't mind the post game at all, and he handles the thing great, and this and that, and he was telling me about school and how he used to stare out the window in school and couldn't wait till he'd get outside and play and all that stuff. But after a while, I said, Larry, do you realize we just talked for a half hour and you didn't use one double negative? And really, that tells you, you know, who he really was and is. And, people talk about environment, and they think, you know, code words, you know, ghetto, but he was a product of an environment, and a totally different environment. You know, when he met Magic for that famous commercial in '85, and they Converse, and
they
were friendly enemies, but they didn't know each other until that point. Mm-hmm. And that's when they got to know each other, and Magic was stunned to find out he grew up much better with a much more stable family life with more money than Larry Bird did. That floored Magic. It really amazed him.
Bob, as always, it was great to talk to you. Great stories, great conversation. Thanks for doing this.
Okay, guys, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That is a great Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. One of the, as I've said, time and again, one of the best dinner companions you're ever going to have if you're on the road.
I could listen to stories about Larry Bird and the Celtics-Lakers rivalry forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just great stuff.
And the thing about Bird is...
What an intriguing character.
Larry Bird? Well, here's this guy from, as Bob said, the poorest township, poorest county in Indiana. And he had so much, and guys always talk about the respect that Larry Bird had for the African-American players in the NBA. There's that Sports Illustrated article where I can't remember which player it is called Larry. You know, he's like one of us. I mean, he's got the same approach to basketball, and people kind of looked at Bird, I think, as this really technical, you know, kind of plodding guy, but he had a great deal of respect. And you look at the people that he became really close to around the game, I mean, guys like Magic, Julius Erving. He ended up getting along really well with the high-profile African-American.
Jeff, he grew up in a high-tension racial area.
Yes.
And he got along with African-Americans and whites, but he grew up playing with a lot of African-Americans. Yeah. He said, I want to play with the best guys, and
they were
the best guys, and they let me play, and we got along.
Yeah.
What difference does it make?
It's remarkable, though.
Which in 2015 is one thing.
Yeah, but...
But in the 60s and 70s...
Yeah.
It was a totally different deal.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the writer. He writes for Esquire, who basically said Larry Bird just doesn't see race.
Mm. Yeah.
He just wanted a ball.
Yeah.
He didn't want to talk.
He just wanted the ball.
He wanted to look outside. He didn't want to go to school. He just wanted to look outside and think about wanting a ball.
Yeah.
And the amazing part from that blue-collar mentality that Bob talked about is ultimately – Larry Bird's chronic back issue occurred as a professional, not on the court, not in season. It was in the off season in the summer. He was basically resurfacing his mother's driveway, and he did it himself, threw his back out, and was never the same.
And it's funny. I wish maybe we'll talk to Bob Ryan about this again, but if you talk to people around the Celtics, they'll tell you that as great as Larry Bird was, if Lenny Bias...
Mm-hmm.
had not passed away,
yep.
Larry Bird's career might have been 4 or 5 years. The peak of his career may have been extended by 4 or 5 years because Lenny Bias was drafted to take some time away from Larry Bird.
Sure.
He was going to be the guy who could come in and sort of replicate Bird's skill set and allow Bird to take
And the late Reggie Lewis was going to be in the mix.
And the late Reggie Lewis is going to be another guy as well. Yeah, it is. He is, in a lot of ways, he's one of the most fascinating professional athletes of the past 20, 30, 40 years, Larry Bird. And, of course, he and Magic Johnson are largely responsible for the boom in basketball. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star is in Mexico City. Canada lost to Argentina. Luis Scola went off for Argentina. And Doug Smith will join us when Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. And we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Now more of what you want to hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, welcome back to Primetime. Jays and Indians just 25 minutes away from the Rogers Center. Madani and I are fighting over the channel changer here.
You squeal like a hyena when tennis comes on.
Well, yeah, because I consider myself to be a sports aficionado, and I don't want to waste my time watching tennis.
He likes to fancy himself as a sports aficionado.
But I don't really enjoy tennis. Oh, that's good. We're having a hard time connecting with Doug Smith in Mexico City.
What a shocker. I remember you and I. I was in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. And
phone
dropped
that.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
And you actually asked me, you're like, you having phone troubles there? I'm like, Jeff, I'm just trying to stay alive.
Yeah. And that's...
Yeah.
That's...
It was the most terrifying day of my life.
Really?
The World Cup qualifier, Canada-Honduras.
And it was such a good match, too.
Yes, yes.
I remember you doing your interviews, trying to find somebody. It's just one of the most embarrassing moments in Canadian sports history.
Absolutely.
And there's Arash, our man on the scene.
Kevin McKenna, the captain, at the half. It's just about damage control at this point. 4-0. Thanks, Kev. Back after this.
anyhow, we wanted to talk to Doug Smith. Canada losing 94-87 to Argentina to open the FIBA Americas tournament in Mexico City. Luis Scola, 35 points for the Argentines. Good news is he's playing for the Raptors this year. Bad news today for Basketball Canada is he was providing the opposition Canada. That was their first game in the four-game first round. They place, they face Cuba on Wednesday. And this is, you know, I think this is the summer of basketball.
Sure.
In this country.
Absolutely.
Given what we saw from our Pan Am Games team.
Let me edit that very minimally.
Okay.
I think it's going to be, they're going to be the summers of basketball.
Yes.
Rio awaits.
Yes.
And I know Doug knows this, but if you talk to people around Canada basketball on the women's side, Jeff, their mission, this is going back a year ago, mm-hmm. is gold in 2020.
Yeah.
I mean, it's full on that's,
yeah.
that's the intention.
Well, the men got, as we said, off to a rough start today, 94-87 against Argentina, Luis Scola. And Doug Smith, the Star, is in Mexico City covering the tournament. Hello, Doug.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing well.
Doug, you got a phone line out of there. I like it.
I know. My cell phone seems to be working if I get to one little square foot area of the arena. So it's great.
Great.
What'd you make of that game today, Doug? I mean, Argentina got a lot of experienced international guys. We know, you know, Scull has been around for a long time. What to you made the difference in that game?
I think Canada just played really tentatively right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to be themselves. Now, yeah, I saw a bunch of the Puerto Rico games on television, not in person, but they didn't have that same kind of, didn't have that burst of energy that they've always had. And I think Corey Joseph going out after 6 minutes with two fouls hurt, I'm sure, a big blow. Because they just played tentatively pretty much all night. And in the fourth quarter, when they had a shot to make another run, they didn't have anybody say, come on, get on my back, I'm going to win this game for us.
It also looked like they seeded a lot of the area around the glass to Argentina as well, which was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, they got killed on the board. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but they got, you know, they didn't close out on guys. They didn't box out guys. I'm not sure how many second chance points they gave up, but it was far, far too many. And in the Marchand Cup, they rebounded pretty much every team they played, and they just didn't have that around the glass today. And you know, give Argentina credit. They're not a bunch of stiffs. They're really, really good.
Mm.
And I know Canada beat them only by 5 in their first game in Puerto Rico 10 days ago, but if you would ask a bunch of people around FIBA Americas and North America who the favorites in this tournament were going in, I think you would have got the two teams to play here tonight, Argentina, Canada.
And Doug, I think a lot of Canadians now with the success of basketball in the country, I mean, it's in the infancy stages. It's not quite where tennis is, but, you know, from an international standpoint, if you're a solid international player, in events like these, that can even trump some NBA experience, can it?
Oh, yeah. It's a totally different game. It's rougher. It's shorter. You have to conserve fouls because you only get 5. It's a lot more drive and kick. There's not any of that.
Right.
Not a lot of isolation like there is in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of illegal screens. It's a crafty man's game. And if you play it in Europe at the highest level, and that was for the longest time a big issue with the Canadian basketball program, is they could not get any of their men into EuroLeague competition. They wouldn't play in Europe, but they wouldn't play in poor leagues in Europe, maybe Division II teams. Now we're getting guys who are playing in the EuroLeague, and that teaches them how to play the international game. And you've got to know how. Just look at this. You know, there's probably, outside of Nocioni and Scola, there's not another guy who's ever sniffed the NBA on this Argentina team. I feel really good. The same thing with the Brazil team this year. The same thing with Mexico. The guy that I own is the only guy anybody's ever heard of, but they know how to play. They play in Spain. They play in France. They play in Russia. They play in the EuroLeague. They play against very good competition in the international game.
Doug, we were in the air, so we didn't see much of the game. But what was Andrew Wiggins' day like?
A couple of huge dunks, but he was, I think, a little passive at mm-hmm. times. And I think he's still feeling his way. I think they probably defensively bumped him and banged him and held him and clutched him and pushed him away from the spots he wants to be in. then he'll learn that you can't let him get away with that. But he seemed a little bit hesitant, like the rest of them did. No one seemed to really be in sync or full of energy today.
Doug, this is one of those vicious tournaments too, right? I mean, the FIBA Americas, you're playing almost every day. And there's very little margin for error to get out of this and qualify for Rio.
Yeah, there's two spots available. Three if Brazil is one of the first two teams. And Canada starts a streak today where they play 8 games in 9 days just to get to the semifinals.
Wow.
1 day off, but the tournament starts on Saturday. So it's a grind. And, you know, it's not so much who you lose to, but what you lose. It's how you bounce back from the inevitable losses. And it's how you stay healthy. This is people don't understand what a grind this is. You're playing 4 innings in a row, have a day to rest your body, then you're playing 4 equally intense games in the next round just to get to the 2 games that might give you a shot to get to Rio.
Conversation with Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. What do you think Jay Triano learned about his team today that he may not have known? Or let me rephrase. Maybe he saw something today that reinforced what he already suspected.
I think he suspected it would take them a little while to get used to the intensity of games at this level. And I think he saw that early today. And I don't think he's enough to say anything to them. You know, every player we talked to, Heslip, Olenek, Corey Joseph, they all said, look, this is just not good enough. We have to be better. We got to work at every facet of the game today. And I don't know if Jay said he didn't know if they were caught by surprise, caught by the moment, fatigue, not ready to go. You know, they just come out 4 idle days. But you know, there's not a lot of yelling and screaming and technical stuff they got to do. They just got to play better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who is the leadership core of that team now, Doug? I mean, it's still a youthful.
I think it should be Corey Joseph. I think he's got to be the guy, the point guard. He's got to be the guy. He's been around this program for a long time.
Yeah.
I think Anthony Bennett has some work to do. He's got some responsibility there, too. But I think Corey becomes the guy. And I think Kelly Olynyk, too, is a fan. He played as a teenager at the World Championships in Turkey in 2010. He's been around here a long time. I think those are the guys that sort of got to take people by the scruff of the neck and say, hey, this is what we got to do. Let's go. Let's get better at this.
And, Doug, in a lot of ways, Kelly's game should be made for the international game, shouldn't it?
Oh, he's really good, yeah. He's got that stretch four capability. He can put the ball on the floor, rebounds pretty well. He and Scola had a hair off today, like, so they both got those crazy looking hair going. And Scola got the best one today by far. But I think Kelly's got a really good, solid international game.
So what now, Doug? They got Cuba coming up next. It's not about scraping yourself off the mat here, but just mathematically, with such little margin for error, what needs to happen for these guys to put themselves in a scenario where they're playing for a shot at legit Olympic qualifying?
Realistically, they got to win 2 of their next 3 to get out of this round, and then they get the 4 teams from the other side. Mexico, I'm not sure who else will come out of that other side. Uruguay, probably, maybe Panama. And then they got to probably win 3 of those 4 games to get in the top 4 and place in the semifinals. Now, I do think they can run the table the rest of this round if they play anywhere near their capabilities. Argentina's really good and are by far, with Canada, I think, the top 2 teams in this side of the draw. So I think they'll get Cuba tomorrow. I think they'll probably run the table the rest of the way. And then they got to probably win 2 or 3 of their next 4 games, and that gets them into 4th place or 3rd place to get them in the semifinals.
Smitty, we're going to let you run. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk to you again.
All right, guys, take care.
It's Doug Smith, the Toronto Star. He is in Mexico City, Canada, losing 94-87 to Argentina. Luis Scola. Schooled by Scola.
That's, come on, you're better than that.
I know. Well, actually, I'm not, to be honest.
Good point, too.
I'm not, to be honest. We talked about the summer of basketball in this country. And you made the point about the women's program in particular, that taking a very deliberate approach towards 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I don't know when it started, but it didn't work out that well for soccer this year, but it's essentially the same sort of progression that John Herdman had planned out for the team. It seems as if at some point in the last 10 years, 12 years, we've become a little more tactical, a little more strategic in how we approach Olympics, instead of just, we're going to send our best and we're going to try to win. There is attention is being paid to working in new players to kind of building almost a sustainable program.
There's a method to the madness. There's no question. 2012, getting into the London Olympics, quite frankly, was a surprise for that program. But that was a veteran group, Jeff. And now you're seeing, you know, led by Kia Nurse, it's much more of a youth movement that's coming up. That's why this is so valuable for them to get to Rio, to get a taste of it, get the experience of it, and ultimately be 4 years after next August for them to go somewhere. What's interesting now from a high-performance standpoint, there's been a changing of the guard over there at Canada Basketball, not just at the top, but also in, you know, rolling up the sleeves and the nuts and bolts in the basketball operation of it. And, you know, between the junior program, between the national team program that Lisa Tomitas is coaching, even the cadet program, Carly Clark's running that over there, and they had some success in 2012. They had some more success this year. It's intriguing to see just from the grassroots level how much of a, you know, philosophical shift has happened and how it's now starting to impact the senior team, you know, at the elite level. So we got a bit of a glimpse of it at Pan Am. We'll get a real good idea next year at the Olympics of where they are and where they need to get to 4 years from now.
Yeah, it seems as if, in comparison to soccer, and I know it's a dangerous comparison to make, but, you know, soccer, I mean, I always say, look, we all know how many kids play soccer in this country. I think it's a sport that has squandered a tremendous amount of financial and human capital, and I've said that. It just has. It's been, to me, almost like 20 years of wasted.
I was going to say
two or three generations. But basketball, you get the sense that there's a much more common sense, almost uniform approach to things. And what's kind of amazed me about basketball, and in some ways we saw it happen in baseball probably 10 years ago, you know, Canadian players are no longer just there to make up the numbers. They're no longer there to be the guy at the end of the bench. They're star players, and even around Steve Nash, they're guys like Andrew Wiggins, Tristan Thompson. These are people who play every game. And it's sometimes I think we get carried away, and maybe it's a hockey mentality. We get carried away with the whole gritty Canadian thing and all that. There's a lot of offensive talent. There's something else besides just grit happening in a lot of our sports.
Jeff, what's unreal about the basketball situation is, you know, this country's national team program went from having one or two NBA players, your Mike Schmarics and your Bill Wenningtons, and then, you know, if not for Steve Nash in 2000 taking Canada on that magical ride to the quarterfinals at the Sydney Olympics, where would they be? To now, legitimately, if this team qualifies for Rio next year, NBA players will be cut.
Yeah.
Now you take any Canadian over the last 50 years, and you tell them you're going to be cutting NBA players from the national team program.
No one would have believed it.
I mean, it's just so far-fetched. I mean, I'm a guy in my mid-30s. You told me that in high school, I'd be like, man, what are you on?
Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly it's happened. Now, it's a matter of building this thing.
Yeah.
And what is Andrew Wiggins going to become? What can Jamal Murray be? Can Anthony Bennett turn it around? Will Kelly Olynyk develop into what they think he... I mean, there are some real questions now as we move forward from an elite standpoint, not just putting up a decent enough team not to embarrass ourselves.
And the other thing that Basketball Canada has done, the thing that Baseball Canada has done, they've engendered loyalty to the program.
Correct.
Baseball Canada, when they lost their funding as a result of it being dropped as an Olympic sport, major league players sat down and wrote out checks to help fund the program. Guys like Justin Morneau, I mean, they took money out of their own pockets to help fund the program. And
let's not understate that. That's as huge.
Oh yeah,
as it gets.
That
right.
That is. If someone's willing to support a program financially to say, yeah, this was important to me, I want to keep this thing going. It's hugely important, and I'll credit Basketball Canada for that. Developing a sense of loyalty, developing a sense of identity with guys who were there, women who were there, and are still there is very important. Mr. Medani, I enjoyed that. Thank you so much.
Jeffrey, always good. See you tomorrow.
We will be back tomorrow. Jays baseball is next from the Rogers Center. Jays and Indians. Jays 1.5 games up and the Yankees. First pitch is just a few minutes away. Have a great night, everybody.